Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly show about the Iowa legislature. I'm John Pemble. Typically, Monday mornings at the Capitol are slow. However, there was nothing typical about last Monday morning. At 10 a.m., a post from a Democratic-leaning blog, Iowa Starting Line, gets the attention of every single reporter, legislator, and political leader in the building. It is about Senate Majority Leader Bill Dix. It has pictures and videos taken of the senator in a Des Moines bar earlier in the month. He is sitting close to a woman who was a State House lobbyist, and at one point, it looks like the two briefly kiss. During the governor's 11 a.m. press conference, she, like everyone else, is just learning about it.
With what little I know, I'm certainly disappointed in what I'm hearing. I don't know all of the facts, and so until I have an opportunity to, I'm hoping to meet with Leader Dix this afternoon and better understand what the facts are. But right now, we just found out about it before we came in.
Reynolds says she thinks Iowans have high standards for elected officials.
You know, they expect us to lead, and I expect to lead. And so, but I want to know the facts. I'm extremely disappointed with what I'm hearing, but until I have an opportunity to hear the story, I'm not going to comment yet.
The Senate normally convenes at 1 o'clock on Mondays. But this time, Republicans and Democrats are in a caucus. This is where each party goes to a different room behind the chamber for a private party meeting. During this caucus, Senator Bill Dix resigns as Majority Leader and Senator. It is sent out as a press release. His one-sentence letter says, "I resign my position as Iowa State Senator and Majority Leader effective at 2 p.m. today, March 12, 2018. As the Republicans emerge from their meeting, Senator Brad Zahn says it's taking everybody by surprise.
We're all disappointed, and my prayers go out to Senator Dix and his family, because I know it's going to be a tough time for them. But we were sent down here to do some business, and we are going to continue, and we'll have our leadership meeting our vote on Wednesday morning.
Senator Charles Schneider speaks with a group of reporters in the Senate chamber.
I'm shocked. I think that's a fair statement, everybody is. But we've got a job to do. That's why people elected us, is to come here and do a job, and we're going to stay focused on that job.
With the job of Majority Leader now available, is Schneider interested?
We'll see what the will of the caucus is.
Do you want the job?
We'll see what the will of the caucus is.
This issue about sexual misconduct and how the Senate should respond to it this session, does this raise new questions about how the chamber, if the chamber is appropriately responding to those concerns about the role of various people within the State House?
Well, as you know, we brought in former Ambassador Mary Kramer. She made several recommendations. One of the things that I wanted to see happen with those recommendations was to have a policy put in place that's similar to what I have it at my employer, and what most of us who work every day at a job for a company or run their own business have in place. So I think Mary Kramer made some good recommendations. The handbook still has to be updated, and I certainly want to see that it's updated to reflect all the recommendations that Mary made.
How would you describe the private meeting you had?
I'm sorry, what?
How would you describe the private meeting you had?
What private meeting?
Didn't you guys have a meeting in which...
Our caucus?
Mm-hmm.
It was it was somber. It was sad. But at the end of the day, we all realize that we have a job to do. That's why our constituents elected us into office. And we're going to focus on that job. And we're going to get it done for our constituents.
Will he have any role in the campaign since he had been raising money and recruiting candidates?
I doubt it.
Is the session going to be able to end in a timely manner? Are you going to be able to move forward on the schedule that you were on?
I believe so. President Whitford has been at the table negotiating with the House and with the governor's office. He will continue to be there in one role or another. Those of us who are committee chairs and have leadership roles within the caucus, we're all ready to move forward and get to work too. We know what our jobs are, and we will see them through in a timely fashion.
You said everybody was shocked. Were people angry?
There's anger as well. Yeah.
Is it possible for you to do that job plus your current job?
We'll see what the will of the caucus is as far as...
What's the will of your wife?
When I left home this morning, this was not news, so we haven't had a chance to talk about it. That's certainly a consideration.
Schneider is the chair of the Appropriations Committee. A week ago, the Revenue Estimating Conference projected the state will receive another $33 million by July. This is close to the amount the governor, House, and Senate proposed cutting from this year's budget in a de-appropriations bill. As the appropriations chair, Senator Schneider says this financial forecast from last week will not stop the plans to make cuts.
We think that leaves us with an adequate cushion to get us through the end of the fiscal year without having to de-appropriate further or transfer money from the savings account. So we're going to move forward with our negotiations with the House and the governor's office based on that. Now, that being said, we do want to reach a consensus, and there are differing opinions. To the extent the House and the governor are willing to be flexible, we can hopefully find a resolution quickly.
Senate Minority Leader Janet Peterson says of Senator Bill Dix's sudden departure from Republican leadership, there's an opportunity for that party to better deal with the culture of sexual harassment.
Republican senators have an obligation to elect a new leader who will take the responsibility for the sexual harassment, discrimination, and retaliation against former Senate Republican staffer Kirsten Anderson by Republican senators and staff.
Peterson is referring to the firing of a Republican staffer, Kirsten Anderson, 5 years ago. Anderson was fired on the same day she sent a memo to her managers, which included Bill Dix, about her male colleagues continuously making inappropriate sexual references. Dix said she was fired because the quality of her work was poor. Anderson sued. During the trial last summer, she singled out some male staffers, including Jim Friedrich. In September, Friedrich resigned. 2 weeks later, Anderson was awarded $1.75 million to be paid by the state. Senate Republicans conducted an internal investigation about sexual harassment. In mid-November, during a press conference, Senator Dix makes conflicting statements about a report of the internal investigation, including whether or not it exists. Toward the end of this press conference, Dix is asked by Iowa Public Radio's Joyce Russell about how Jim Friedrich left in September.
Can you enlighten us on why the staff member who was really at the center of this in the trial, he stayed on staff for quite a long time after all of this came out.
Mm-hmm.
That looks kind of unseemly. Can you explain that?
All I know is that he brought us his letter of resignation, and we accepted it.
That doesn't really answer my question.
That is the truth. He brought his letter of resignation, and we accepted it.
But I mean, my question is why you didn't take some action. I mean, you said you believed everything in the trial. Why you didn't take some action before that instead of waiting for his...
Again, he brought his letter of resignation, and we accepted it. He brought his letter of resignation, and we accepted it.
So, there might be folks who would be critical of how you're answering that question because it doesn't offer a lot of insight on whether his resignation was directly linked to all of this. It simply sounds like an employee who simply resigned to resign. So, are you concerned about the appearance of that? Like, that raises questions about how forthcoming you will be about this whole thing.
I don't know how to answer the question any more clearly. The gentleman offered his letter of resignation, and we accepted it, plain and simple.
Why did you not ask for his resignation given what came out at trial?
He offered his letter of resignation, and we accepted it.
All right, I think got it, guys. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Initially, Senator Dix didn't want to release the report about the internal investigation, but eventually he did. It indicates others feared reporting sexual harassment for fear of retaliation. Critics of Dix called for his resignation for how he handled the Kirsten Anderson firing, the consequences of her lawsuit, and for his reluctance in providing information toward the end of last year. Back to this week, when the video of Senator Dix in a bar with a lobbyist emerges. Senate Minority Leader Janet Peterson says when Senator Dix was the majority leader, steps to improve the culture of sexual harassment at the Capitol weren't enough.
Well, we've seen a failure on Senate Republicans to address the situation immediately following the verdict in the Kirsten Anderson lawsuit. It's time for them to take this issue seriously as legislatures around the country are dealing with this.
So are you going to are Senate Democrats going to run campaign ads saying that?
I don't go anywhere where I don't have an Iowan ask me why they are footing the bill, a $1.75 million bill for sexual harassment and retaliation caused by the Senate Republicans.
So you think it will be an issue then?
I do believe Iowans are still very angry, and today's news didn't help that matter.
Senator Peterson is careful not to accuse Senator Dix of committing sexual harassment, only that under his leadership, he didn't do enough to prevent something like this from happening again. When asked if she believed Dix's interaction with a female lobbyist in a bar and the Kirsten Anderson harassment case are connected.
I do believe that they're connected. It is an issue of power and how one chooses to use it.
The majority leader is responsible for choosing which bills will be debated in the Senate. While there isn't a rule prohibiting legislators having a relationship with lobbyists, critics of Dix say his involvement with someone like that can influence which bills do or do not come before the body. With his departure, there are potentially 4 weeks of this session ahead. Republicans caucus and choose a new majority leader. And it's a person already familiar to those following the legislative session, Senate President Jack Whitfer.
I was elected the majority leader. We also had elections for president, majority whip, and assistant leader. Charles Schneider is our new Senate president here in the state of Iowa. Amy Sinclair was elected majority whip, and Jake Chapman was added to our assistant leader team. And so I'm honored and humbled that the caucus has shown confidence in me to lead the caucus going forward and in our leadership team as we continue to move forward. The people sent us here to do work, and we are going to continue to do the same work and the same agenda that we have had over the last year and a half. In 8 years, I have never been part of a more united caucus, leaving the caucus room this morning, and they're excited to get to work. And so I look forward to working with the House, the governor, our leadership team, and our caucus as we continue to move the state forward.
With Whitfer moving away from the president's chair, Senator Charles Schneider is now the president of the Senate. Schneider says he is looking forward to this new position.
Obviously, it's not something I'd anticipated happening when I woke up on Monday, but circumstances being what they were, I thought I could help contribute to the caucus and to the Senate and moving things forward and getting things accomplished.
Will you be naming a new appropriations chair soon, or did that happen already?
We haven't really had that conversation yet. I expect I will probably serve out the rest of this year as the appropriations chair and shepherd the budget through. We're close to having that completed anyway. And once we identify targets, it's normally the budget subcommittee chairs who do a lot of the work at that point. So my guess is we'll probably continue in that fashion. Good idea.
Left hand on the Bible, raise your right hand.
On Thursday morning in the Senate chamber, Chief Justice Mark Cady swears in Schneider.
Please repeat after me. I, Charles Schneider.
I, Charles Schneider.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I'll support the Constitution of the United States.
That I'll support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Iowa.
And the Constitution of the State of Iowa.
And that I will faithfully discharge.
And that I will faithfully discharge.
The duties of the President of the Senate.
The duties of the President of the Senate.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations. There you go. I'll try not to break it.
Schneider addresses the body as the first time as the president.
Fellow senators, I'm honored and humbled to preside over this fine deliberative body. The Iowa Senate is the embodiment of the ideals of our founding, and the principle of a representative federal republic exists within these walls. I've proudly served the 22nd District for the last 6 years. Now, it is an absolute honor to not just be able to serve my district, but all of you who represent the entirety of the state of Iowa. I am humbled that my colleagues have entrusted me to step into this crucial position of the President of the Senate, and I look forward to rising to the expectations placed upon me.
Former President, now Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer, speaks during points of personal privilege. It's almost like an opening day speech.
Friends and colleagues, I rise today to say thank you for the honor to serve as Senate President over the last year and a half. I tried my best to be fair and impartial as I presided over this chamber. Today I rise to speak in a new role, and I want to thank my colleagues for the confidence to select me as our new Republican Majority Leader. And though the office and the title and the responsibilities have changed, the goal has not changed. I ran for office 7 years ago to make Iowa a better place. I wanted to be part of a new generation of leaders that were willing to look beyond the next election and look to the next generation. And as a father of three young children, I only have one agenda. And it's not a Republican agenda, and it's not a Democratic agenda. It is an Iowa agenda. And though that agenda is one, it ensures that our kids have more opportunities than we had when we were growing up here in the state of Iowa. And as a, you know, I know all of us, regardless of party, we have the same goal. And the goal is to be the best state in the nation. We may differ on the path to get there, but we cannot disagree on the result. We have made a tremendous amount of progress in the state of Iowa. We all know Iowa was recently ranked number one in the U.S. News and World Report state ranking. We were number one in infrastructure. We were number three in healthcare. We were number five in education. And while we have made great strides, there is always room for improvement. Our work is not done. We must continue to promote and pass the policies that make Iowa a place where our residents want to stay here after graduation. They want to live here. They want to work here. And we want to entice more people to come to the state of Iowa. I look forward to a seamless transition as we continue to work on our priorities. I look forward to passing a tax reform bill to give more money back to the hardworking Iowans. I look forward to passing a future-ready Iowa bill to ensure that we have a workforce ready for the 21st century. And I look forward to passing a fiscally sound budget in the coming weeks. And I'm extremely excited to continue our goal of making Iowa the most job-friendly state in the entire nation. You know, as a former football player, they always said, it's easier to get to the top than to stay at the top. It's hard to stay there. But I want to challenge this body, the House, the governor, our state, to continue to make the tough choices needed to keep us as the number one state in the nation. So I just, again, thank you for the confidence to lead. I look forward to working with each and every one of you as we continue to try to make Iowa a model for the other 49 states to follow. Thank you.
On Thursday morning, the Senate adjourns until the following Monday with this new leadership for the remaining weeks of the 87th General Assembly. This is Under the Golden Dome from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pemble. Traffic enforcement cameras in Iowa are in neighborhoods and intersections monitoring for speeding and stop sign violations. The cameras on the interstates are no longer issuing tickets after the Department of Transportation had this function disabled. The city of Cedar Rapids wants them back on, and right now a case before the Iowa Supreme Court may decide the future of traffic enforcement cameras. The decision won't be handed down until later this year. Last month, the Senate passed a bill eliminating all traffic enforcement cameras. But this bill isn't going before the House. Instead, the House is debating a bill the Senate passed last year that adds more regulation to traffic enforcement cameras. Representative Ashley Hinson is the floor manager.
Safety, personal responsibility, sensible oversight, and due process. This bill, Senate File 220, is a bill to establish guidelines for automated traffic enforcement systems in Iowa. This bill would require a demonstrated safety need in a public justification report and a hearing. It would require approval from the state. It would require regular calibration of cameras, clear signage for both mobile and fixed cameras, an officer to review each citation and the relevant information before issuing a ticket, an appeals process with an impartial body and the ability to appeal to small claims, and an appeal and petition process at the local level for people to be able to take the cameras down should they choose. The dollars collected from these tickets would be required to be used in a secondary road fund, street construction fund, or in a public safety fund.
But some representatives want to ban traffic enforcement cameras. Representative Jake Highfield presents an amendment that would do so.
My amendment will ban all traffic cameras in the state of Iowa. It will, in place, what we have is constitutional law, so people do not challenge these. Having, they also will stop the abuse of the cities for using these for revenue. If the cities need more revenue, they should raise their taxes and stop abusing this. I will ask you any questions, but I'll also defer my opening comments to Representative Kaufman.
Representative Bobby Kaufman has explained his opposition to traffic enforcement cameras earlier this year on the show. On the House floor, Kaufman continues the opening remarks for Representative Highfield's amendment.
People will tell you that these traffic cameras are about safety. Well, I would surmise then that in 2% of this state where traffic cameras are actually used, if that empirical evidence supports that the presence of traffic cameras equals better safety measures, I would say that in the 98% of the state where traffic deaths, where traffic accidents are trending downwards, maybe that might be because of the absence of them. One of the most incriminating pieces of evidence towards traffic cameras being about safety are traffic cameras themselves. Because when they were ordered to be shut off but not to stop monitoring on 380, the data's in. The cameras themselves' data is in. And while speed is slightly up, accidents are down.
This amendment is ruled not germane. When an amendment is ruled not germane, a motion to suspend the rules is often proposed.
I move that we suspend the rules and immediately consider Amendment 1267.
Representative Highfield asks for a vote to suspend the rules so this amendment can be considered. The body votes yes. Immediately after this happens, the Democrats stop the debate to caucus. After strategizing for 30 minutes, the House resumes debate on the amendment to ban all traffic enforcement cameras. Representative Gary Carlson rises to oppose the amendment.
When I look today at law enforcement, they're a finite resource, a critical resource that we have in our state. We're asking them to do many things. We're asking them to investigate domestic assaults, theft. We want more law enforcement available for our schools. We still need to enforce traffic safety. And today we have a chance to modify the use of how cameras are used, to address many of the concerns of abuse of how they have been used, but to effectively and efficiently use our law enforcement to enforce those rules so that we can use our law enforcement to also do other things.
Representative Tim Cassina says enforcement cameras promote safety.
11 miles an hour over the speed limit. This is when you get a ticket. Running a red light, this is when you get a ticket. Both infractions of the law. I support law enforcement, and if you've ever worked on an interstate, as I had the last 20 years on a rescue rig, you'd know how dangerous they are. We do not need our police officers standing out there putting them in more danger when we have a camera doing it for them. Automation is good in every other industry that we look at. Right now, we just built a new Seaboard Triumph hog facility, automated in many parts of it. Why can we not automate public safety the same way if it's good for the people?
Cassina says the money generated from camera fines in his area helped build a new firefighting station. But Representative John Wills says these cameras are an issue of liberty and freedom.
These cameras deprive people of their due process of law. You've all heard of stories of people receiving one of these tickets and not having been driving their vehicle at the time that they received the ticket. These cameras deprive people of their due process, and that's wrong. I believe that if these cameras are truly about safety, then we can use that technology without the punitive damages and without violating people's due process. I think that's important as well. I just want to, because I'm not smart enough to come up with this myself, I want to read something, and it's very important. It's not something that I came up with. They who give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty or safety. Now, that was by Benjamin Franklin a lot longer ago than what I've been around. I would also add, those who give up liberty for some money do not deserve liberty or safety as well.
Representative Kaufman defends the amendment by asking, if enforcement cameras are about safety, why are so few communities using them?
If traffic cameras are the best thing since sliced bread, puppies, and world peace, why doesn't every town have them? If these are an automatic equalization of safety, heck, let's put them up everywhere. Let's mandate them. But only 2% of our state uses them. If this is about safety, then why does the 98% of the state that does not use traffic cameras experience the exact same decrease in accidents and accident deaths that the 2% that have them do? Perhaps it's because the absence of traffic cameras is good for safety.
Representative Wes Breckenridge, who is a police officer, says these cameras are a tool for law enforcement and favors making standards for them.
So as you think about this amendment, which I oppose, to take tools away from law enforcement, when you have criteria in place in this bill that forces them to justify it, gives an appeal process and a petition process to address the issues that were brought up by members of this chamber, it's unfortunate. I am pleading with you not to take this away as a tool. You can continue to regulate and make sure they're not abusing this and not using it for monetary gain, make sure they're not putting it places they're not supposed to, and continue to improve this if you want to, but don't fully take the tool away. I implore you not to take that tool away.
Debate for this bill as a whole centers around this amendment. It is opposed by Democrats and some Republicans. The amendment is voted down 43-55. Minutes later, the floor manager for the bill, Ashley Hinson, delivers closing remarks. She responds to criticism that enforcement cameras are simply cash grabs.
As far as a cash grab, we use state revenue from our citations to fund our priorities here, so I think it's a little hypocritical to criticize it being used as revenue for a city. We have clearly laid out in Senate File 220 what that revenue is to go for: public safety, secondary roads. We have penalties in place for people who break our laws. When people get a driver's license, it's a contract with the state that you agree to follow those laws. Clearly, the people who are being issued these citations are breaking those laws, and they should be held accountable. This bill lays out transparency in the process, calibrations by trained officials, petition process for removal. Let's face it, Iowans speed. They run red lights. More Iowans than ever are speeding. Insurify says Iowa has the highest ranking in the country for speeding tickets and a lower number of law enforcement officers per capita in the top 10 speeding states. This is a law enforcement tool to hold people accountable. And there are sensible regulations and due process built in. So I'd say again, our job as legislators is to fix problems and to find solutions. And Senate File 220 does exactly this. I'd ask for your support for the bill. And Mr. Speaker, I ask it be read for the last time and placed on its passage.
The bill passes 77-21. That means many people who voted for the amendment abolishing enforcement cameras voted for this bill to regulate them. Those voting yes for this include Bobby Kaufman and Jake Highfill. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. I'm John Pemble.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
Last month, the Senate passed a bill restricting abortion after the heartbeat of a fetus can be detected. This is usually around 6 weeks. The House isn't likely to debate that Senate bill, but most of it is included as an amendment to a different bill the Senate passed last year prohibiting the sale of fetal body parts. Because this is the second half of the General Assembly, bills from a year ago from the opposite chamber often resurface like this. For example, our previous segment about regulating traffic enforcement cameras. This committee focuses largely on the controversy of abortion. The room is filled with activists, something that normally happens with this topic. Committee Chair Joel Fry acknowledges the unusual number of guests.
I would like to remind everyone in the room that we are under House rules, which means this is a function of the committee. The committee will be having the conversation. Would ask that any form of protesting or signage or anything like that, please keep that to yourself. If not, we would have to, under House rules, ask you to step out of the room because we want the committee to be able to function and do its work today. But we are thrilled that you're all here with us today, and we're thankful that you all decided to come and be a part of this conversation around the table today for the Human Resources Committee. So thank you and welcome everyone to our committee.
Representative Shannon Lundgren introduces the fetal body part bill, but quickly moves to the amendment. The amendment is very similar to the Senate fetal heartbeat bill passed last month.
This is a change from the Senate file that was passed to the House. This amendment does not include criminal penalties for physicians, and it has stricken any language in regards to the 20-week abortion bill that we passed last year.
A law was signed last year prohibiting abortions after 20 weeks. This bill is more aggressive, and some supporters hope it will be constitutionally challenged all the way to the United States Supreme Court. The goal in that case would be it could overturn Roe v. Wade, the 1973 decision that legalized abortions in the United States. It's a big gamble, but one of the Republican priorities of this General Assembly is to pass laws restricting abortion. Opponents of abortion restrictions say this bill makes safe abortions difficult. Representative Sandy Salmon says there is no such thing as a safe abortion.
When I look at the term safe abortion, it's an oxymoron. Who is that safe for? Who is an abortion safe for? It's not safe for the baby because they're all killed. It's not safe for the woman. Some are killed, and then the rest are wounded. Dr. Priscilla Coleman, professor of human development and family studies at the Bowling Green State University in Ohio, says this: the evidence is accumulating despite socio-political agendas to keep the truth from the academic journals and ultimately from women to ensure that the big business of abortion continues unimpeded. The literature now echoes the voices of millions of women for whom abortion was not a liberating, health-promoting choice. A conservative estimate from the best available data is 20 to 30% of women who undergo an abortion will experience serious and/or prolonged negative consequences. Any interpretation of the available research that does not acknowledge the strong evidence now available in the professional literature represents a conscious choice to ignore basic principles of scientific integrity. The human fallout to such a choice by the APA and like-minded colleagues is misinformed professionals, millions of women struggling in isolation to make sense of a past abortion, thousands who will seek an abortion today without benefit of known risks, and millions who will make this often life-altering decision tomorrow without the basic right of informed consent, which is routinely extended for all other elective surgeries in the U.S. I also heard the comment about wanting legal abortion. Unfortunately, a number of things that are legal are also destructive, and this is among the worst. Slavery was at one time legal, but it was eventually outlawed, and slaves were granted the rights of citizens. The same thing is going to happen to abortion. It will be outlawed someday, and the unborn will someday enjoy their right as a citizen. It may not happen this year or next year, but it will eventually happen.
Representative Mary Masher opposes this bill. She asks Representative Lundgren to yield to questions.
Certainly. Representative Lundgren, is there a definition for woman in this bill?
I don't believe so.
Is there a definition for woman in the Iowa Code?
I would have to check on that. I'm not sure.
Okay. Is a 7-year-old a woman?
No.
If a 7-year-old is having a period and is menstruating, is she a woman?
I suppose it would depend on the definition of when someone becomes a woman, but...
But it is not defined in this bill.
It is not in this bill.
So if a 7-year-old becomes pregnant due to rape or incest, as Representative... I'm sorry. As you know, this is a pretty emotional issue for a lot of us. And Representative Hedden's asked or talked about the fact that there are young girls who can become pregnant. We know that because as a teacher, I had 7, 8, 9-year-old girls who were menstruating. And we know that that's occurring earlier and earlier in a young girl's life. I don't consider them women. According to your bill, it would be illegal, am I correct? Because you did not make any exceptions for a woman's age. And if a young girl is pregnant, would you agree that that could be a life-threatening situation and she would be allowed to have an abortion?
In this bill, there is no exception for rape or incest.
So a 7-year-old who is pregnant due to rape
would have to carry the life.
Wow. I'm just dumbfounded. If your daughter was raped, you would force her to go through a pregnancy that could destroy her life? I'm just dumbfounded. I can't even imagine putting your daughter through something like that. I just can't. And I can't imagine Iowans would think that's okay, especially when that was through no fault of her own. She can't even have consensual sex, let alone have a child. Representative Lundgren, you live in a different world than I do, because I don't see how you could possibly allow a child to go through that, or a child with a disability. Representative Heddens, you hit it right on the head. How could we possibly think that that's okay?
And Representative Masher,
I will stop right there. I asked you to yield. You answered my question as best you could. You don't have a definition for woman in this bill. That is an enormous issue, and it should be one that is addressed. I am just appalled. I'm appalled that that isn't part of this discussion. It should be.
Representative Timmy Brown Powers says she doesn't think anyone in the committee room wants to see an abortion.
But I also don't think that I belong in your uterus. I don't think I belong there. So there's where we're at. So what always gets me on this, because I hate the thought of abortion. I really do. It bothers me. But what I just can't figure out, we talk about smaller government. I didn't know it was going to be that small. We talk about constitutional rights. Yesterday, we talked about the liberties of traffic cameras. Today, we're talking about the woman having no constitutional rights. We talked about the unborn having constitutional... No.
Speak your point.
Not you, Representative Brown Powers. You made it very clear, Mr. Chair, at the beginning of this, that there would be no demonstrations or signs. I would appreciate it if there be no demonstrations.
So noted. We would ask the room to please keep your demonstrations to yourself. Otherwise, we'd have to ask you to leave the room. Thank you. Representative Brown Powers, you have the floor.
Thank you. So we talked about the unborn having constitutional rights. We all have constitutional rights. We all have liberties. Why is it that we always want to bring this bill up to take away the woman's constitutional rights? We're not talking about a vasectomy today. We're talking about you not being smart enough to make an informed, educated decision about your own body with your family, your husband, your God, whomever. That's what we're talking about. That is not any of my business. I don't live in your home. I don't live your life. I don't understand what you do or what you don't do. I don't believe maybe what you believe. I am here to represent my constituents in Waterloo, Iowa. I am not here to be in their home to tell them what they can and cannot do with their body. I don't tell any of my constituents what they can and cannot do with their body. That is, you know, we could talk about the ear piercings, the abortions, we could talk about all kinds of things that I may or may not agree with, but that's none of my business. The bottom line of this bill is that woman will make a decision and she will live with that decision. And that will be between her, the people she made that decision with, the person above that she believes or doesn't believe in, and she will go forth. And I'm okay with that. Now, if I have a friend come to me, if my son's girlfriend comes to me, I'm going to do everything I can to say, let's not make that choice. We have other choices. But at the end of the day, not my decision. The only decision I can make is my own. I'm a mother of one who had 8 miscarriages. I would never choose an abortion for me. But I cannot choose for any of you what you would do. Because quite frankly, it is none of my business. The government doesn't belong in there. Legislators don't belong there. For heaven's sakes, I get it, Sandy. I understand. It's a horrible thing. But at the end of the day, it's not my business, and it's not yours.
This committee meeting is longer than usual. After about 2 hours, Representative Shannon Lundgren delivers closing remarks.
I have the utmost respect for you around this table. 98% of what we work on here, we agree on. We've worked very hard on together. Representative Masher, I don't want you to think that I don't believe that a case of rape or incest is a horrific, terrible thing, because it is. And I know there are people in this room that have already tweeted out to social media to tell the world that I believe that someone should have to suffer through an incident of rape and incest. But I bet you've left out the one important reason why we're here today. And that is that there is another life at stake. We've talked about civil liberties. We've talked about heartbeat. We've talked about race and equality. Everyone around this table does what they can to defend the defenseless. Very few of us around the table are willing to stand up and defend the unborn who are defenseless. We talked about constituent work. You've heard from your constituents, both for and against, and so have I. And so I believe I am standing up for the constituents back home and in this room that have asked us to make a stand for those unborn lives. I'll say it, Representative Hunter, all lives matter. Absolutely all lives matter.
The bill, as amended, passes out of Human Resources Committee, 12-9. All Democrats oppose, including one Republican, Representative Michael Bergen. The bill is now eligible for House debate. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. I'm John Pimble. When there is a vacancy for a legislator during the session, the governor has 5 days to call a special election. Senate District 25 is now vacant after Senator Bill Dix's resignation. A special election for it will happen on April 10th. There are procedures that will take about a week after the election, which means it is possible a new senator could be in office a day or so before the 100th scheduled day of this session. Right now, that's the target for this session to end, as all per diems for legislators stop after day 100. Under the Golden Dome gives you an intimate point of view of what it is like to be at the Capitol. There are so many story ideas at the beginning of the week, and I'm able to sift through them because my colleagues at Iowa Public Radio help me. This includes our Statehouse correspondent, Joyce Russell. Also working her way through the halls of the Capitol is our reporter, Katerina Sestarik. We get a great deal of help from Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson as well. Thank you, Kay. I'm always fed ideas and guests or possibilities by the talk show team producers Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. The Iowa Public Radio program director that gets it all rolling here is Catherine Perkins. News director Michael Leland is there for every story we do, and we can't make it through the week without his edits, guidance, and discussions. This show comes out every Friday night only online. It's on iowapublicradio.org, the IPR app, and iTunes, Google Play, and other forms of podcast subscription. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.